then you have to put in a system. The system has to get a system. You got our own institutions. Told our other institutions exactly what happened or was the case with respect to anybody that they were looking for a weapon to hire. And he's ridiculous because he found several situations where unacceptable people had been hired by somebody else after being left over in another area. And the reference was always praised in such terms that it never revealed that it was an undesirable appointment. And all the institutions were so enthusiastic about getting rid of an individual that they didn't care if they were saddling that individual on another institution, which didn't need that problem to begin with. And so we got to stop that kind of thing. It's bad enough if you're asking somebody from the outside, and you get answers that are not completely truthful, but to ask your own people and get those answers make no sense.
You have to work on it, and you want to unload it.
Yep.
You got to download that up. Let me just a couple things here. Do you have any information on acquisition of flux ponds for the marine sciences? That's where the university and the Department of Environmental Sciences are all that together.
I remember your desire to do it. I remember meeting with the conservation people. I remember something that we wanted to do. I wanted to do that because I thought it was something appropriate to do. But I can't automatically recall in some of the details of it. I just know that it's the desirable to do and we wanted to do it. I visited it several times to make sure that I used the clean quickly with what it was and why it was. And then you educated it. But it's got to be somewhere in the files if it becomes important information on it. It was an arrangement that I felt was highly desirable because it again represented a departure from norm, as you might expect something to be.
One of the first occasions that I had anything to do with Lord Melville, he had lunch with the mayor and they were worried about
on the port of the hotel
And then you lay it down, and then you let the mountain take place. He can lie covered with his feet and take his ears and his feet as he couldn't understand what was telling him there. And if he did, he could think he's been out of the gate. He was standing on top of a bicep naked. He could be the wrong way. That's the ear drive that's killing him. Normally, what people do is,
identifying the need, and you have to convince people that even in terms of limited needs, they have educational needs, and that educational needs didn't only apply to people of real means who could afford to pay the tuition that related to the private institution. There were so many people who couldn't see the educational need for disadvantaged youngsters. And by disadvantaged, I don't mean to use the term that it's now applied, but as it existed at that time. Some of us who came out of college, during the Depression area, and subsequently, before the Second World War, we were disadvantaged in the sense of, one, we didn't have any money, and two, we didn't have any capabilities to get at it. But there were a lot of people, and there were very well-meaning people who were convinced all along that this was not the thing to do, but we had in the state of New York, all the educational higher education could still be needed to have in terms of this private education. And I remember you to argue in what in the pursuits of sometimes as it sounded, but it doesn't do any good for a kid from homeschool who needs an agriculture program. Yeah, you tell them that there's a vacancy in a seminary in Niagara Falls. He don't want to be a seminary. He wants to go to Ag College. Among the classrooms that in the vacancies that existed, there was always counted endless numbers of seats and classrooms, space that was not usable in a sense, because it was dedicated to a particular purpose, such as religious purpose. Religious time, and religious time, that's not the space available, and that tended to distort things. So that was one of the problems, and then once you get by this, you had the problem of money and resources, and that was a very significant problem. And so we beat that one, basically, because we were able to finance the debt service. I'm borrowing to build the building. And I remember making a presentation to the legislature committee one time. And when we come out of the room, this was on the Capitol, the trust and budget, we were then elevated to the big 600 million number. And this was pretty shocking for the legislative people, because it escalated from our original estimates that the university program was going to call for the expense of some $200 million. So it was like double. And most of my comments were persuasive. If I was in the room, one fellow that I knew very well was the secretary of the Assembly Ways and Means Committee. His name was North Shore. Now he died very early on, but North said to me, "Larry, he did not address nor did anybody raise the question." And he said, "I refrain from raising the question because I know you're ready to hear you answers. When you do all these buildings, when you pay all these fees in them, how are you going to pay the rent?" And I laughed. I said, "That's your problem." He says, "I figured he'd probably say something smart. I was in the house at that time." But I said, you're right. But first things first, we cannot address the problem of the university's growth and development and the building of the buildings on the basis of how you're going to be able to pay for the development of those, pay for the operation of those facilities, and pay for the faculty, and pay for this, and pay for that, down the road. I said, any more than you can say is that, you're going to stand still population-wise. That's the tax structure is going to stand still. I don't know what the tax structure is going to be 10 years from now. I don't know what the population is going to be. I don't know what the income tax is going to be. And at that time, and if you knew what it was going to produce at that time with some degree of certainty, You might sit here and say, well, that's no problem at all. I said, this is just how I would have to answer you. You can't refrain from doing this and say that you can't afford to run those facilities when they get into operation. And if you make that comment on the basis of what you know about your revenue today, it's impossible. But, so money was, and it constantly was. I think that those two issues were so intertwined the private party would say, they give us the money, look, we can do this job. And there was, some sentiment for efforts to be made in that direction. But then we had contract power, just like they had at Cornell. But they don't work. They don't work this job. Not the way to go. This run and build the facilities at the private college campuses, and you can buy time from the private colleges that pay for instruction at $6 an hour, et cetera. There were all kinds of suggestions made as to how you could work out some system of providing for and not building the state university with its name. And to me, I could see tremendous numerical growth in students. I mean, after all, when we were talking, we were dealing with like 35,000 full-time students in the whole state university system. And I could look down the road and say, boy, I can see 60,000 in a couple of years. I can see 150,000 in a short period of time. I'm not sure that I can see beyond that, but we didn't contemplate then that we would be talking about 300,000+ full-time enrollment and all the others. But when we dealt with the University of Auburn, for example, in 6th grade, and this had some bearing upon what happened, I set out their repairs, and Stephen came to me and said, "Larry, are you going to be listening for a minute?" I said, "Sure." He said, "You know what's contemplated to be done here?" I said, "Hey, he said, the University of Auburn, the College of Auburn, we're going to build a bridge over Western Avenue, and we're going to expand into this federal care section, and we're going to provide for something like 3,500 to 4,000 students in this expanded program for the College of Auburn." That's wrong. That doesn't make sense at all. He said, "I've been trying to get somebody to say that for all the time I've been talking." I said, well, what are you doing? He said, "Like, didn't anybody listen?" I said, "I'm listening." He said, "I don't think it ought to happen." I said, "I don't think it ought to happen to you either. Let's do something about it." So we did something about it. And fortunately, it's another long story, but fortunately, we had a governor at that time who looked at things in a broad way, in a big perspective, and everything else a lot. Then he said, "How many students are you talking about?" I said, 15,000. Well, 15,000 students was like half the enrollment that we had full time when we started into this program. I didn't know whether 15,000 was the right number, but I knew it was big enough to attract somebody's attention. And look at it from a standpoint that, boy, now we're talking. And as a consequence, these are the kinds of directions that we headed in. I don't know what the enrollment over at Auburn is today, but I'll bet you it's close to 14,000-15,000. The story about Auburn, how that got to be, is another kind of a story, but it relates to the university's dimension. And then you ask what were some of the major problems. I think we touched on it, but those were, and the third problem that got involved was bureaucracy itself. And the fact that all this got accomplished in the face of the bureaucracy that we had to handle for something else too. The fact that he got freed up from it and got some breathing room of our own for a period of time was very significant. You can go back and choke on a lot of bureaucracy subsequently, but if you can get that momentum going without it, sometimes it's difficult for even bureaucracy to come back and to choke you off more and more.
And then people is a problem. We had to
somehow bring into the system people with the kind of vision and the kind of drive that leadership presented, not the kind of stand back that followers provided. And so we were constantly kind of losing. Then we recruit people. Let's look for the best. Let's say we can, maybe we can't give them what they want today, but maybe tomorrow. Let's look for the best presidents that we can find. I need to tell you how when you have the question of tuition, I call the meeting of all the college presidents. I had to do something that was, I felt, dramatic, and something which was not. You had to be subjected to some kind of a fool or something. And I'm never saying, well, this is the opportunity that we had to move as a goal. I'll answer any questions you may have, but this is what we're going to do. And anybody who cannot accommodate for this, as a matter of principle, is free to get up and turn in the resignation and leave. But I want to say to you that if you stay here, in this room, and you stay with this program, I want to clearly understand that we will count you as committed 110% to doing this and making this realistic goal. And this is one of the tools with which we do it. So, in other words, improvement in curriculum, for improvement in faculty, for improvements in it, above and beyond the normal budget appropriation. And I said, I think that this is important to be able to say that we can have this, that we can sell it. And I sold the idea.